Today we're standing at the gate of the People's Park in the centre of Limerick's Georgian Quarter, and we're joined by three people who are passionate about the built environment and the culture that shapes the places we live in.
I'm James Ring, I'm the Chief Executive of the Limerick Civic Trust, and we for the past 31 years have been carrying out architectural and natural environment restoration and preservation projects to improve the city.
I'm Tom Cassidy, Conservation Officer with Limerick County Council, and with the amalgamation of the two local authorities, I'm covering the City of Limerick now.
I'm Hugh Murray, I'm an architect and urban designer. I'm from Limerick, and I've had the privilege over the last 30 or 40 years of working in Limerick and building many buildings, the most obvious ones being Thomond Park and the Clarion Hotel and the City Gallery and the People's Park. I'm very passionate and concerned about the future of Limerick as a living city.
We might take a stroll into the People's Park. There's some lovely, graceful avenues as you come into the park.
When you come up here of a Sunday morning, it's like going back in time, because when there's no one around and there's no cars on the road, and you stand in Perry Square, or you stand at Michael's Church, or even at the Dominican's Church, and look, it's like looking back in time, because this is effectively what it would have looked like.
And it's very much in the heart of Georgian Limerick, Tom.
We think in terms of planning as a very modern process, but the people, the landlords of these areas, weren't seeking to create hugely densely occupied areas. They made provision in their leases that there had to be open space, there had to be parks, there had to be plenty of facility for getting light and air into the streetscapes that were being formed and created.
The moment you come in here, we're dropping down to our left into a playground and then down again into a little valley rising.
This actually was a filled site, it was a dump at one stage, a bit like Stephen's Green was in Dublin. And actually it was intended that on this side and on all four sides there would be Georgian houses. And the rise that you see in the hollow here, this was in fact getting ready to build Georgian houses with basements here. And there's a hollow over on the other side. So when you, if you stand here, you can imagine that the terrace of houses on Perry Square is repeated on that far side and this side, the street going around with the monument and the park in the middle.
When the Perry family donated this land to turn it into People's Park, I think if they came back now and saw what it is today, I think for them they'd be very proud. Because when you look around, you see all God's creatures got a place in the choir in this park, you know, and you have all shapes and sizes in here and age groups and just enjoying it. And that was the whole purpose of this park. It's the real gem in Limerick City's crown, really, this park.
And would it initially have been intended for the people of Limerick?
I think looking at the plans, it was intended to be open, unlike, say, Fitzwilliam Square. And it has always been open to the public, to the best of my knowledge. I lived in Perry Square here in the Victorian houses, and my kids used to play here. And it's wonderful to see this modern, safe kids' playground, because they had another playground where they had battering rams, and that swung through the air and nearly took kids' heads off. And the swings were made out of plate metal with sharp edges that would slice the side of your head off. And it was a regular occurrence that you'd see kids pumping with blood being carried out the gate of the park, rushing off to hospital.
It toughened us all up, though.
Don't see any sign of that here. Yeah.
Preliminary training for being Munster rugby players, maybe.
And I suppose that's one of the aspects of the built environment that you all share a passion for, is that blending between the public and the private spaces.
To make cities attractive to live in, we need to be much more aware of the value of public realm, where people can live in cities but have lots of room to have recreation and kids to play. And the most recent investment in the riverfront here, really attractive, very well done riverside walk, is a fantastic amenity for the city.
The way that Limerick has turned its face towards the river in recent years has to be something that takes place in a highly structured, very well planned way.
It was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that developers realised that waterfront adds value to property, and the amenity value of having views and open space and water is very attractive.
A lot of our environmental type work is focused on the river, actually, and we maintain fairly much, I'd say 80-90% of the river walks in the city. There's a huge traffic, and it's becoming almost like a training route for people in the city, that they kind of lap the river. I think people who maybe don't have an interest as such in historical buildings are now organically absorbing these buildings. You know, they're seeing them on routes that they probably wouldn't have seen before. For example, where I am based in the Bishop's Palace, which is a medieval home, there's people calling in because it's on that river walk and actually just popping in to stick a head in the door and look at the building. Not really ask any questions as such, but just go in, have a look around, and they're out again, they're off and they keep on going. And that's happening a lot lately.
We've come now to a much quieter part of the park, away from the playground, and we're now in the shadow of this memorial, which is stretching up on a very tall plinth. Who have we got on the top of it?
Spring Rice. He was the MP for Limerick at the end of the Georgian era, and he was responsible for a lot of development in the city and for leading the end of the Georgian era.
And of course, the Spring Rice name is tied in with this decade of centenaries that we're well into at this stage. And Mary Spring Rice of Mount Trenchard House crewed for Erskine Childers in the host gun running in July of 1914. And that's the important thing, is that the built heritage is a tangible way of connecting with the history that we read in our books. That's an important reason for preserving this material. They carry stories.
Maybe this is an opportune point to actually talk about how all three of you ended up in the fields that you have.
I have no idea, really. I just always knew at a young age that I wanted to be an architect. And the first time I was aware of architecture was Joe Walsh Tours had started the first of the package holidays in the 60s, which satisfied my mother, whose great ambition was to bring her family to Lourdes. And on the way from Lourdes to Lloret de Mar, we passed through Barcelona. And out of the bus, I saw the spire of the Sagrada de Familia by Antonio Gaudi. And I said, "What's that?" And they said, "Be quiet, you can find out on the way back." And on the way back, we passed it again, and I saw it. And so you said I could find out about that. And said, "No, we haven't time." But when I got home, I looked it up, and it was before the age of the internet. I have no idea how I found out more about it, but that started my interest in architecture.
And Tom?
Well, my background is in archaeology. When I graduated, I was offered a job with the Galway Archaeological Survey, and it was recognised from a fairly early age in my professional career that I had more interest on what was on the land than what was under the sod.
Can you remember going into a particular building and saying, "Whoa, look at this"?
The most extraordinary experience of my childhood is remembering a house that my mother's father built, which was basically a converted mill, and upstairs were the remains of an Edwardian steamer that was shipwrecked on the west coast of Cork that he bought. So there was a cast iron balcony made up out of the bridge, and there were portholes of brass and that sort of thing.
Well, I was an environmental scientist, and I was quite happy being an environmental scientist. And then I saw basically the Civic Trust advertised for a new director. I think it was just too good an opportunity to turn down for me, because as someone who was born and raised in Limerick and then lived away, I was tired of the false impression that people had of Limerick City. And I felt that taking over something like the Civic Trust, you could genuinely have a scope to do something about it, that you could take on projects that would change the image of the city. And I guess that's why I took it.
And are you finding your own relationship with the city is changing over the years?
One of the things that I noticed when I left Limerick, and I lived in Dublin and in Cork, all right, both of those cities have beautiful architecture, you know, but what I think Limerick has that the other two probably don't have as well is the blend between the natural and the built environment is so close together. So for example, when you have a park like this or the river walks, there's some beautiful parts of the city as well, like the Island Bank walkway, and you pass King John's Castle and you're passing the cathedral. They blend in well together, you know.
This is Cultural Passions. I'm standing in the middle of Perry Square in the heart of Limerick City with Tom Cassidy, Hugh Murray and James Ring. In this series, we've been talking with different culture makers, and one of the things that has really struck is how ephemeral a lot of that work is. But the work that you're involved in, Hugh, is something that's there almost forever.
It's the wonderful thing about architecture is almost every civilization we know of, we recognize it in our mind, it registers as a picture of their architecture, but that's also frightening. because an artist can tear up a canvas and a singer can finish a song. But if you make a mistake as an architect, it's still there for everybody to see. And as Frank Lloyd Wright said, you know, doctors differ and patients die. All an architect can do is grow ivy over their mistakes. So there's a huge responsibility there. And Seamus Heaney talks about the act of the sacred versus the profane in architecture, that if you're not sensitive to your surroundings and you don't take your responsibility as an architect to the public and to the community as well as your client, you do end up committing profane acts. And as we know, unfortunately, there are quite a few of those around, of poor quality buildings that not only are not well designed, but are really in the wrong place and in the wrong context.
So we're standing in the middle of Perry Square in the heart of Georgian Limerick, perhaps the last great building boom before the recent Celtic Tiger years. Has the Celtic Tiger years been good for Limerick?
I would think overall it has. I mean, I would have been a kid really in the 80s, but the Limerick I remember as a kid was not really the nicest place in the world to grow up. You know, it was a lot of run-down buildings, a lot of wasteland around my own area anyway. But when I look at it now, it's a whole different ballgame. You know, it's a really nice place to live now. There are some parts of it that I think still could be improved. There are some buildings I don't personally like. But overall, I think, yeah, the Celtic Tiger has been good to Limerick City.
The improvements on the waterfront that we've talked about are very positive. We've had some very good new built fabric. But I think you also have to regret the planning permissions that were given for developments on the perimeter, especially shopping centres, that have pulled the life out of the heart of the city, especially O'Connell Street. The Celtic Tiger came and it went, but I don't think it left in the centre of Limerick the trail of destruction that I've seen elsewhere around the country.
Before we go, has there been one thing that you've done in your career in exploring your passion for the built environment that's actually said, this is why I do it?
Well, that's an easy one for me to answer, Thomond Park. It was just the perfect project. It meant a lot to everybody, and it was the opportunity to create something that huge amount of citizens of Limerick and the country would use, and to make it a landmark, and also to overcome the scepticism of the memory of what people had of Thomond Park, and sure they're going to wreck it anyway. It's just a lovely legacy to have there as part of the portfolio of my work in Limerick, and I'm very happy with it.
Where I assist a widow get the thatch repaired on her roof, which means that she can stay living there for 7 or 8 years more in the place where she married into, she reared her children, and you know, it lengthens her life in more ways than one. That to me is important.
One project I do love is the Bishop's Palace, and I love it because it was about to be knocked until the Civic Trust took it and restored it, and it was a shell. And now it is a landmark building, and it is our home, and it would be a real shame to think that that building might not have been with us only for a few brave souls stood in its way, you know.
I think we underestimate the quality of the fabric of our city. Like Georgian Limerick is the largest footprint of Georgian architecture outside Dublin. There are wonderful streets and set pieces. It's a beautiful environment to live in. And we have to find a way of making a living city, of getting business back in and getting people living here. And if we could just believe in the need to do it and use the creativity that's around here, that I think in a very short time we could achieve an awful lot in the city.